They're dead,
Sister Bie stammered into the telephone in her Saint-Sulpice residence. She was leaving a message on an answering machine.
Please pick up. They're all dead.
The first three phone numbers on the list had produced terrifying results. A hysterical widow, a detective working late at a murder scene, and a somber priest consoling a bereaved family. All three contacts were dead, and now, as she called the fourth and final number, she got an answering machine. The outgoing message offered no name, but simply asked the caller to leave a message.
The floor panel has been broken, she pleaded as she left the message. The other three are dead.
Sister Bie did not know the identities of the four men she protected, but the private phone numbers stashed beneath her bed were for use only on one condition.
If that floor panel is ever broken, the faceless messenger had told her, it means one of us has been mortally threatened and been forced to tell a desperate lie. Call the numbers. Warn the others.
It was a silent alarm. The plan had amazed her when she first heard it. If the identity of one brother was compromised, he could tell a lie that would start in motion a mechanism to warn the others. Tonight, however, it seemed that more than one had been compromised.
Hang up the phone, a deep voice said from the doorway.
Turning in terror, she saw the massive monk. He was clutching the heavy iron votive stand. Shaking, she set the phone back in the cradle.
They are dead, the monk said, all four of them. And they have played me for a fool. Tell me where the keystone is.
I don't know, Sister Bie said truthfully. That secret is guarded by others.
A sudden explosion of rage erupted behind the monk's eyes. He lunged, lashing out with the votive stand like a club. As Sister Bie fell, her last feeling was an overwhelming sense of foreboding.
All four are dead. The precious truth is lost forever.
The security alarm on the west end of the Denon Wing sent the pigeons in the nearby Tuileries Gardens scattering as Langdon and Sophie dashed out into the Paris night. As they ran across the plaza to Sophie's car, Langdon could hear police sirens wailing in the distance.
That's it there,
Sophie called, pointing to a red, snub-nosed two-seater parked on the plaza. The vehicle was easily the smallest car Langdon had ever seen.
Smart car, she said. 100 kilometers to the liter.
Langdon had barely thrown himself into the passenger seat before Sophie gunned the smart car up and over a curb, out onto a gravel median. He gripped the dash as the car shot out across a sidewalk and bounced back down over a curb, out onto the small rotary at Carousel du Louvre. The embassy was only about 2 miles away, and Langdon settled into his seat. So dark the con of man. Sophie's quick thinking had been impressive. Madonna of the Rocks. Sophie had said her grandfather left her something behind the painting. A final message? As Sophie gunned the car up Champs-Élysées, Langdon said, the painting. What was behind it? Her eyes remained on the road.
I'll show you once we're safely inside the embassy.
You'll show it to me? Langdon was surprised. He left you a physical object? Sophie gave a curt nod.
Embossed with a fleur-de-lis and the initials P.S.
Langdon couldn't believe his ears.
We're going to make it,
Sophie thought as she swung the smart car's wheel to the right, cutting sharply past the luxurious Hôtel de Crillon into Paris's tree-lined diplomatic neighborhood. The embassy was less than a mile away now. Even as she drove, Sophie's mind remained locked on the key in her pocket, and her memories of seeing it many years ago, the gold head shaped as an equal-armed cross, the triangular shaft, the indentations, and the embossed flowery seal, and the letters P.S. Although the key barely had entered Sophie's thoughts through the years, her work in the intelligence community had taught her plenty about security, and now the key's peculiar tooling no longer looked so mystifying.
A laser-tooled varying matrix, impossible to duplicate.
Rather than teeth that moved tumblers, this key's complex series of laser-burned pockmarks were examined by an electric eye. If the eye determined that the hexagonal pockmarks were correctly spaced, arranged, and rotated, then the lock would open. Sophie could not begin to imagine what a key like this opened. but she sensed Robert would be able to tell her. After all, he had described the key's embossed seal without ever seeing it. The cruciform on top implied the key belonged to some kind of Christian organization, and yet Sophie knew of no churches that used laser-tooled varying matrix keys.
Besides, my grandfather was no Christian.
Sophie had witnessed proof of that 10 years ago. Ironically, it had been another key, a far more normal one, that had revealed his true nature to her.